Okay. House Committee on Revenue for Monday, February 9th, 2009 will come to order. First, we're going to begin with an information meeting on the tax expenditure report. Paul?
Mr. Chair, we've asked Craig Fisher from the Research Section, Department of Revenue, to come and review the tax expenditure report with you. The department has had the responsibility of putting together the biennial report since 95. So they've completed this, and it's released at the time of the governor's budget. So he'll go through the latest report and address any questions the committee has.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As Paul mentioned, my name is Craig Fisher. I'm the research manager for the Department of Revenue. What I'd like to do today is give you some background about the tax expenditure report and hopefully provide you with some context that will make this a more useful document for you. The concept of tax expenditures is really quite an established one. The federal government has produced a tax expenditure budget for roughly 40 years, and over half the states produce tax expenditure reports. But the fundamental concept is that there are provisions of tax law that impart some special treatment to groups of taxpayers that can be viewed as the equivalent of spending. So if you put in place a tax credit, for example, to create a particular incentive, that could also be done by receiving the revenue and having a direct appropriation for that particular purpose. So the term tax expenditure derives from that concept of these elements being the equivalent of spending through the tax system. In Oregon, there was an act in the Budget Accountability Act in 1995 requires that the governor put together a tax expenditure report. And the material included in the bill states that these tax expenditures are, in fact, similar to direct expenditures, and that the tax expenditure report will allow tax expenditures to be debated in conjunction with online budgets. So the recognition in this Budget Accountability Act was that these provisions are, in fact, counterparts of spending through the tax system. The specific definition in Oregon law of tax expenditure is really quite broad. It really relates to any law of the federal government or this state that exempts, and I won't read this, but it's got a variety of persons, income, goods, services, or property from the impact of established taxes, and that includes exclusions, subtractions, exemptions, deferrals, et cetera. And the thing I may point out is this is a particularly broad definition, as we'll see later, that it involves, we've identified 18 tax programs in Oregon that have tax expenditures. And I'll try to describe a little bit more. Because this is particularly broad, some of that direct connection with spending doesn't line up quite as neatly for some provisions in Oregon law as it does for others. Just to give you a sense for the composition of tax expenditures, as I mentioned, there are 18 tax programs that involve expenditures, and you can see there are 380 in total that we're producing for the 09-11 report. And of those, they are predominantly focused, and this is the number of expenditures, not the revenue effect, but about two-thirds of those, almost 60%, is involved in the income tax program. About a third of them is in the property tax program, and the remaining 40 or so are scattered throughout the other 16 tax programs. There are several in each of those. And it might be useful if you could sort of break these down a little bit. I found it useful to look at particular categories of these expenditures. It's sort of it's a significantly large book, and it helps to look at these in different smaller categories. But if you look at the income components, again, this involves both personal and corporate tax programs. There are various components. And because we tie to the federal definition of taxable income, there are a number of provisions, exclusions, adjustments, and deductions at the federal level that automatically flow to Oregon. And so there are tax expenditures at the Oregon level. So there are 62 exclusions, and this would be examples of this would be public assistance payments, employer-provided medical benefits, employer pension contributions, certain Social Security benefits. Federal deductions include the itemized deductions, college savings plans, you have accelerated depreciation, itemized deductions like charitable contributions and mortgage interest payments. So all of those, because we tie to the federal definition, are also Oregon tax expenditures. So you have about 116 of those that of the 216 that directly relate to the federal provisions. And then in addition, there are Oregon-specific, they're all Oregon-specific in the sense that we tie to them, but the Oregon subtractions and credits and other provisions are those that are more directly, more specifically acted on, if you will, by the state. And Oregon subtractions include items like the Oregon 529 college savings subtractions, the additional medical deduction for elderly. Oregon extends the Social Security benefit subtraction at the federal level and the subtraction for federal income taxes. There are 64 Oregon credits, and these range from the earned income credit, film production development contributions, qualified research activities, working family child care, just to name a few. And then there are a number of Oregon provisions, such as certain apportionment treatment or treatment of foreign residents or filing status. So fundamentally, that's how most of the tax expenditures on the income tax side are broken out. And then similarly, you can break the property taxes down into those that are fully exempt property, some that are partially exempt. There are special assessments like farmland, forest land. And then, as I mentioned, there are a scattering of expenditures in the various other tax programs. To look generally at the sort of relative magnitudes of the expenditures, as this essentially adds the revenue impacts associated with each of these as they were broken out earlier with the 380 total. And you can see the sum of these adds to almost $31 billion. I want to talk a little bit more about some of the some observations about these revenue impacts, because they're heavily influenced by a small number of tax expenditures that you should be aware of. But essentially, of that $31 billion, about a third of it or so is represented by the individual or by the income tax provisions, again, both personal and corporate. And about two-thirds of it's represented by the property tax exemptions. And as I'll talk a little bit later, these are heavily influenced by a small number of very large expenditures. For example, on the income tax side, these are the top 10 tax expenditures. Seven of these really derive from our federal definition of taxable income. I've highlighted those that are more Oregon-specific, the Oregon personal exemption credit, the Oregon federal income tax deduction, and the Social Security benefits, the extension of that federal treatment. But what you can see from this list is that of the $11.1 billion represented by these tax expenditures, 64% of it is represented by these top 10, and about a third is represented by the remaining roughly 206 tax expenditures. So there's a significant degree of concentration in some of these very large expenditures. Similarly, on the property tax side, these are the top 10 property tax expenditures, and this is particularly concentrated. You can see of the $19.7 billion total revenue impact here, $12 billion of that is represented by a very large intangible personal property element. These are intangibles such as financial records, stocks, checking accounts, goodwill, intangible kinds of products. It's a very large element, but it's useful to know then that these top 10 represent 97% of the revenue impact of the property tax expenditures. So I think it's useful to know the degree to which these are concentrated and the degree to which some of these very large expenditures can influence the totals. Just if I could talk a little bit about the elements that the report must contain. It's required that the report includes a list of all the tax expenditures, including the statutory authority. It must include the purpose of the expenditure. And I must state that that is actually not quite as straightforward as it might first appear. There are a number of provisions that have explicit statutory references that describe what the purpose of each provision is, but a number of these really simply exist in law, and we can infer a purpose from them, but it's not always explicitly stated. And that becomes quite important later when we talk about how these are to be evaluated. The report must contain revenue loss estimates, both for the current biennium as well as, in this case, the 09-11 biennium. The tax expenditures are to be organized according to the budget program or function. Again, this relates to that similarity between the spending, direct spending programs. So there's an attempt made to identify which Oregon budget program these expenditures are associated with. The expenditures are to be evaluated. This is one of the elements that actually makes the Oregon report unique. There are very few cases where there's such a formalized attempt to evaluate the effectiveness of these tax expenditures. And in this case, there's a requirement that the tax expenditures be evaluated according to whether they accomplish their purpose and whether or not they're the most fiscally effective means of accomplishing their purpose. Again, I believe the intent is to evaluate these relative to direct spending. Is this the best way of accomplishing this particular purpose? And again, as I mentioned earlier, this makes those purpose statements particularly important because of the expectation is that these be evaluated according to their purpose. It's quite important to know what the purpose is. And finally, there's a requirement that any tax expenditure that will sunset in the next biennium have a recommendation from the governor regarding whether the provision should be extended or whether the sunset should be allowed to occur. And here are the tax expenditures that are scheduled for sunset in the 09-11 biennium. There are three income tax credits scheduled for sunset. There are five property tax provisions, three full exemptions, and two partial exemptions. And then there are two medical provider tax expenditures, which really sunset because the tax itself sunsets in this case. And in this, for this set, the governor has recommended that the sunset be extended in all cases. I thought I might give you just a little bit of a guide to using the report to make this as useful as possible for you. Might be useful to note that there are three indexes in the report. The first index organizes the tax expenditures according to the tax program. That first table that we saw showed them where the income taxes were up front, and we went through the exclusions and the federal deductions and the Oregon subtractions and the Oregon credits, and then into the property taxes and the rest of the tax programs. That's how that first index is organized. But the second index that may be useful then organizes those expenditures by program area. So all of the education provisions, all of the human services provisions, the natural resource provisions are organized in one place. So that's another way of looking at the same grouping of expenditures. And then finally, we have a glossary, or we have organized these by title in the back of the book that if you know the name of it or a common name for that, it might be useful to find the book. It also may be useful to understand that the book is organized in chapters where each chapter represents one tax program. In fact, there are two additional chapters of the book this time. There's now an inheritance tax, a natural resource tax expenditure, and the new construction tax for school districts that was passed in the 07 session also has some exceptions to it that creates tax expenditures. So those are two of the new chapters. But each of the chapters of the book begins with a description of the tax itself. So it's a good resource to understand a little bit of background information about the tax. And then there is the detail provided for each of the tax expenditures in that tax program. I might just touch a little bit on some issues related to the estimates of revenue lost. These are static estimates, so these don't take into account the full dynamic. This isn't like an Oregon tax incidence model simulation of all of these, so they are static estimates. There are some interactions between expenditures as well. There may be some areas where property, for example, could be exempt under more than one statute, so eliminating that a particular exemption may not necessarily yield all the revenue because that property may also be exempt under another. There are also connections between some of the income tax provisions. So if you change a particular subtraction, that might also influence its interaction with a credit. So there are some interactions that make it difficult to sort of add up all the individual concepts. In fact, this is fairly frequently done even at the federal level, where the tax expenditures are typically added up because there's a lot of interest in knowing the relative orders of magnitude of the expenditures, but there are some concerns that we need to keep track of when we do that. It's useful to point out that the revenue estimates are in some cases different than the potential yield from eliminating the provision. In some cases, there are carry-forward provisions where a taxpayer is able to carry forward, say, a credit into future tax periods, where eliminating the provision, there will still be some remnants of that through the in future periods. So in some cases, it may be the exact same as eliminating one at the beginning of the biennium, but in some cases, it depends on the tax expenditure. I might also point out that on the property tax revenue impacts, there are two components to this. There is a loss and a shift component to this. And the loss represents the amount that will be lost to the local districts. That is, if property is removed from the rolls, local districts will receive less revenue. But there is also a component, say a bond, that will be repaid by the owners of property in the district that will be paid in full. And so there is a shift then from the exempt owners of the exempt property to those that are remaining. So there's both a loss and a shift component to property tax pieces. Although the indexes only represent the revenue loss portion. So when we list those in the indexes, that does not add the loss and the shift. But the two combined represent the benefit to the taxpayers, whereas the loss component is really the amount that's lost to local districts. And finally, I might mention that a lot of these revenue estimates were made last summer, early fall, and there's a rapidly changing economic and revenue outlook. So a number of these may be adjusted if we were to redo these today. But they're still useful, I think, as orders of magnitude. And I think that's the main point to discuss in terms of the revenue. I might just briefly describe what the Department of Revenue's role in this tax expenditure report is. Our role is to first identify and describe any new, modified, or deleted tax expenditures, which of these provisions meet the requirements of statute. We produce the estimates of revenue loss, although in for the transportation components, for the fuel tax and the weight mile tax, the Department of Transportation develops those revenue loss estimates. And then we coordinate information flow among agencies, the DAS Budget Management Office and the Governor's Office, to facilitate these evaluations. I think it's important to note that an attempt is made to identify the subject matter specialist that relates to a particular provision. So if it's a housing credit, we would look to the housing agency to conduct the evaluation for those. The department... We occasionally get questions about our evaluations of these tax expenditures, and in most cases these are done by agencies who have either subject matter expertise or specific program responsibility. Finally, or just to give you a little bit different look on the tax expenditures, this is these 380 tax expenditures that we saw earlier broken out by tax program. Here is how they are distributed according to the budget or function categories. These are the specific budget categories that are listed in the recommended budget or that are used in budgeting. And so we've identified those tax expenditures that relate to those budget categories and then those that don't. There are some that are in place because they're prohibited by federal law, or they're there for tax administration reasons, or they just don't fit a particular agency responsibility. Like you have a property tax exemption for fraternal organizations, for example, or religious institutions. I'm not sure which specific agency would have a responsibility for evaluating whether that accomplishes its purpose, or the federal itemized deduction for charitable contributions. It's not clear which agency would have responsibility for evaluating whether that, in fact, accomplishes its purpose. So there are roughly about 90 of these that don't fit cleanly into these particular budget categories. But in terms of the revenue impact, it about two-thirds of those don't quite fit the spending category neatly. So to summarize, the tax expenditure report provides quite a bit of detailed information about Oregon's tax system. The tax expenditures are reported in conjunction with the budget because they do have the similarity with direct spending or that connection. And that the report is the result of the work of roughly 30 agencies. There's quite a bit of agency participation in this. And that we would always appreciate feedback about how useful this report is for you. Mr. Chair, that's all I had.
Thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I don't know about the usefulness of the tax expenditure report, but this was a very concise, well-put report to us, and I wonder if I could have copies of all of those graphs that were put in there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Is this report found online?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is. It's on the Department of Revenue's website.
Okay. It might be useful to post this summary there, too.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do so.
I think that others might benefit from this as well as the committee. Other
questions, thoughts?
Now's the time to talk to the man who probably knows it as well as anyone does. Thank you very much. We appreciate your appearance here today and the very concise and informative report.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll close the information meeting and open a public hearing on House Bill 2067.
Is that you?
It's Chris.
Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2067, the intent of that bill was to put sunset dates on the Oregon tax credits that don't currently have sunsets. It was restricted to just the credits, so in relation to the presentation you just heard, it was not intended to address any of the deductions or subtractions piece of the tax expenditure report, just the Oregon credits. So you should have in your packet an SMS that tries to make a little bit of sense out of the listing language of 2067, and I just grouped the tax expenditure credits in the SMS according to when the sunset date would be. The bill takes the credits and puts them into three categories: those that would sunset on January 1, 2014, January 1, 2016, and January 1, 2018, just so that they're staggered through time to facilitate policy analysis and discussion at the appropriate time. And so in that SMS, I put the number from the tax expenditure report, just heard about the name of the credit, the statute, and then the sunset date. And so that's all the bill really does. I would point out in the SMS, in that middle table, for those that sunset in 2016, the third from the bottom, the 1.442 diesel truck engines new, is not in the bill. I got the diesel truck engine retrofit repower, I believe, is in the bill twice because it's in law twice. For those of you who were here in 2007, will probably recall that that credit got put into House Bill 3201, so the credit existed in that bill. But there are also a number of other policy issues related to pollution and so forth that existed in House Bill 2172, and they couldn't be cleanly separated from a legal standpoint, so the credit existed in both of those bills.
Does that mean that someone gets the credit twice?
No, Mr. Chair.
Good. Thank you. Do we have anyone to be heard this morning?
Nobody signed up.
Now, that's interesting. Here we are looking at a major policy shift. Colleagues, I think one of the reasons why we drafted this bill was to deal with the reality that one of the jobs of this committee is to act as the budget committee, if you will, the Ways and Means Committee, for the purpose of the tax expenditures. And if indeed Chris is right, and these are all of the tax credits that don't have sunsets, then the purpose of establishing this is to essentially give the committee a schedule under which it would review them. I think, from my point of view, it is not the object of the bill to actually do away with any of these credits, but rather to establish a schedule upon which the committee is sort of forced to look at them and to determine whether or not it makes sense to keep them. Any other comments while we're in public hearing? Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, by way of just my understanding, these are the last that in the book that do not have sunsets. Is that?
I believe that was the intent. I believe the bill currently might miss a couple of credits that don't have sunsets. I'm still verifying.
But it was.
That's the intent.
Mr. Chair, it was the work plan of this committee to deal with the sunset issue. And I guess my question, and I don't know if there's an answer here, short of going through these one by one, is that I'm just looking at a list, and I don't know whether, 4 or 5 years or 8 years is a good time for them individually, and why that was picked. It seems somewhat random and not related to what the expenditure is, but sort of, well, let's take some dates and run them out. Do you understand my question, Mr. Chair? And I guess a little homework is in order to see if it makes. I mean, some of these tax expenditures, I think, could have longer sunset lives, and others we might even want shorter sunset lives, if you will.
I completely agree.
Well, but this is sort of random based on what, Chris?
Representative Berger, I would not disagree with that statement.
Okay, thank you.
The intent was to get a bill drafted that put the issue before you and kind of highlighted them, but I don't know that there was any necessarily magical formula to decide which went in 2014, 2016, 2018. It was the discussion was intended to provide some sort of time frame so that all of the credits can be reviewed in kind of a cyclical fashion.
I understand.
Right. And I think, yes, Representative Bailey.
No, after you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I was going to say one of the issues in response to Representative Berger's question might be that there may be some of these that require longer sunset dates in order to get people to use them at all.
Right.
There may be others where shorter or the elimination of the credit might make more sense. And I agree. I don't think that they're on the calendar that is established by this bill in an order that would reflect that reality, either of those realities. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just making sure that I'm, to follow on Representative Berger's question, that I'm understanding. So this is all of the items in the tax expenditure report that are tax credits only that didn't have sunset provisions, is that correct?
That's the intent was just to focus on credits. Just to focus on credits. And there are a couple in here that actually move a sunset date from either 2018 to 2016. And I believe there are still a couple of credits that aren't on this list in terms of identifying them.
Oh.
I'm still going, I'm double checking.
You're still looking.
I'm still double checking.
All right.
And was the intention to focus on credits versus other tax expenditures, was that to limit the amount of chewing with what we're biting off, or is that was there another technical reason for that?
That was part of it. It's also in terms of policy choices. You have those kind of two categories, those that are due to our Federal Connect, so all of the federal deductions that we tie to, and so there's a policy implication there about tying to federal law and separating, your charitable contributions or home mortgage interest, some of those. And so there, that Federal Connect piece has another angle to the policy discussions you would have. The tax credits are very, they're Oregon-specific. And so it's a dual purpose.
It appears as though the committee's discussion is actually flushing a witness. Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba here this morning representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. We had some question about the intent of the bill as well. Excuse me, and I prepared some testimony in opposition. It sounds like what we're talking about here is a policy to put these on some sort of a rotating schedule to bring them back for review, which I think we would look forward to the opportunity to do that. We are interested in the tax credit, which is on Section 14 ORS 315613, which is the rural medical practice, which is a $5,000 annual tax credit for rural practitioners serving in rural Oregon and has been incredibly successful. We believe in recruiting and retaining qualified health care providers in rural Oregon. And as we all know, that rural Oregon is under attack in a variety of ways. The economy on and off the farm is struggling. Opportunities for the current and the next generation of family are fewer and fewer. And the health care fabric of many communities is also under duress. I came here to oppose the bill, but I think if it's a policy decision that gives us an opportunity to come back at a future date, then, you know, we look forward to that opportunity because the $5,000 tax credit is a key incentive for health care providers to locate and serve the rural communities of Oregon. Physician assistants, if you look in the tax credit reports, there's about 158 PAs that are taking advantage of this, and it's a good program, and we strongly encourage its continuation and look forward to coming back in 2015 and making the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koba, thank you for coming up. Do you have some figures about or some report to show where those physicians are who are taking a part in this and where, if they're traveling, where they're traveling from and to and stuff like that? Do you have that report?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Riley, I don't have that in front of me, but of course there's a definition of the hospitals and the clinics and the type of practitioners that are open and able to receive this tax credit. I can get you that information. I believe the Office of Rural Health has some of that information.
If you'd get that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Will do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. Anyone else? Thank you. Committee, I expect that we will continue looking at this bill. If there are those on the committee who would like to spend some time dealing with the questions that have been raised, I would appreciate knowing about that in the next day or two so we can pursue it. I believe that it is important from the standpoint of administration of the tax law that we do this kind of thing. And I noted in the report that other states don't do as well as we do on the issue of what are the purposes of the tax expenditures and how successful are they. And I have to say that appalls me if that is true, because we don't do a very good job. And it is my hope, at least, that we will start doing a better job of actually justifying the dollars that we spend by never collecting them in the first place. Anything else on the public hearing? I don't see anything. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2067. I note, colleagues, for the calendar that on Wednesday, it is Wednesday, isn't it, that we are meeting at 1 o'clock in this room, in hearing room A, the other end of the, no, this in this room, yes, in this room, with the Transportation Committee. We will not be meeting at 8 o'clock that morning. So you can schedule other things at that time, but we're going to be learning more about transportation issues. Yes, Representative Gelser, then Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to extend my apologies. The House Education Committee, which I serve on and chair, is meeting jointly with the House Senate Committee on Education at 1 o'clock on Wednesday.
At exactly
as well.
The same time.
Yes.
Well, we will miss you, but I'm sure you'll be kept up to date. Representative Berger.
Well, I was just commenting my neighbor here that there are four of us who serve on both, so we would have been there anyway.
Yes. Well, I think that's one of the reasons we fit in this room,
yeah.
Because there are a bunch of overlap, and so it works. Thank you. And with that, you have an hour and 20 minutes extra time today. We are adjourned.